Welcome to TNT's Hit Songs from Mars, where we unravel the stories behind some of pop's most unlikely hits.
From simple curiosities to songs that changed the world, we examine the socio-political and cultural factors that contributed to the success of these surprising outliers.
And the impact these songs had on society. I'm Tom Thompson.
And I'm Tyler Ralston. And together we're
TNT.
How do you?
Hello, my plaided twin friend.
Yes, we become more and more similar as time goes on, and I'm not sure who should be more insulted by that, you or me.
That's a very good question. What can we determine from looking at our plaid? Mine's a little bit more wild. Mine's a bit out there.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, mine's cooler.
Read more boring.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, like what colors are those? Lavender, puce, and mauve. Yeah, okay, Tom.
Mauve.
You like mauve, do you?
I do. Mauve. We call it mauve in Canada.
Mauve. Oh, here we go. We're gonna have this battle first thing. The mauve mauve that's been like brewing for decades.
That's right. The mauve mauve battle.
Mauve my ass. Mauve your ass. That's what I have to say about that. Mauve.
Okay. Let's try and start this on a better ground.
Note.
A better note.
Okay.
So still kind of riding high from the Brian Ruby interview from our last episode.
Yeah, that was a fun experience.
And be curious to hear what our listeners think as we move into season 4 of our podcast, what they think about the guest option.
This will be the first episode of season 4. And by the time this is published, we will have hit 5,000 downloads as well.
Woo.
And this one marks our 25th episode. So we got some milestones and our first interview with someone outside of the two of us. So a lot of stuff happening here on Hit Songs from Mars.
Yeah. And then I wanted to just have a little bit of a pedal steel dork moment, but also to lend some peace between our countries.
Okay. The peace bridge wasn't enough in Buffalo, but okay, go ahead.
So I played a show in Toronto a few weeks ago, and on the first song, I went to hit that beautiful knee lever chord change, and my knee lever snapped right off.
All right.
And that's never happened to me before. I looked down, and there's a piece of my pedal steel lying on the floor on the very first song. So that was kind of interesting. Anyway, I made it through the show okay, and I had another show the next day, and I made it through that as well. But I reached out to a guy in Nashville, and I said, hey, someone recommended him. And I said, would you happen to have any spare parts for these old Showbud guitars? This guy, Jeff Surratt, he owns a pedal steel company called Show Pro Steel Guitars. Anyway, someone suggested I reach out to him that he might have these parts lying around. So I sent him an email asking, and I checked an hour later, and he's like, hey, I just made you the part. I made it for you.
Oh, that's far out.
Yeah. So he mailed it out to me, and I've installed it on the steel, and it works perfectly.
Hey, that's,
so I thought
that's
that
amazing.
Was very impressed with that. It is a pretty cool community, and I was very impressed that he just took it upon himself to make me a new part like that in an hour.
It's amazing how the pedal steel community can transcend international boundaries like that.
It's true.
It's kind of, in Rec Van Fitzgerald, the Rec of the Edmund Fitzgerald, it, same thing happened because of the pedal steel in the song. I mean,
oh, I like where this is going.
Yeah,
oh, wow,
this is peace through pedal steel diplomacy. That's where this is headed. We need more pedal steel.
It's true. When are you going to start?
No, seriously, that was really cool of the guy.
Yeah, it was really cool. It's hats off.
Yeah, and it so restores your faith in humanity when you meet someone like that, you know?
It really does. It really does. And I think this is kind of one of the best things about our modern world is people in these communities helping each other out. It's pretty amazing what people will do for strangers, you know?
Yeah, and the thing is, it's probably most people. It's just the bad apples get all the press, so to speak.
True. Yeah. Let's just think that every person has a little bit of that generous spirit in them.
Yeah. Here, here. Yeah.
Wow. I'm pretty hippie today.
Yeah. You're just hippy dippy rainbow.
Maybe
Tom.
It's the mauve.
It's the mauve. Yeah. How can you wear mauve, or excuse me, mauve,
and
not get in touch with your inner hippy dippy rainbow persona, you know?
It, absolutely. Yeah. Oh, what are you drinking?
Black sludge coffee. It's been a train wreck here, Tom. I'm telling you.
Oh.
Like before we went live, I was telling Tom about my technical issues. One thing after another, I managed to solve them all. But the big one was my French press and my coffee thing.
Oh,
something happened where I was like, did I leave something in it? And then boom, phew. Coffee everywhere.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. I thought I'd left like a sponge in the thing when I washed it or something. But nope, it just was stuck and I found out the hard way. You got to be gentle with French presses.
I think that's funny that that's your definition of technical difficulties. I was picturing like, oh, internet issues or whatever. I think it's
funny. I had all of those too. But for once, I solved them. And that's a rare treat.
Yeah. Nice. So sludge. You got the sludge. I'm drinking... Red rose tea. I think there was I think there was a saying in the 70s or 80s. There was a commercial and the tagline was only in Canada, because it was supposed to be like, oh, look, we're better than the British. We have our own tea that's not available in the UK.
Yeah, because they won't buy it, but that's beside the point.
Good morning.
Good morning,
sir.
Father.
What's this?
Red rose tea, dear. Teddy brought it with him from Canada.
Daddy, he says it's better than our British tea.
He does. He says it's Canada's favourite cup of tea and tastes more delicious than British tea.
Children, it's a unique Canadian blend. Can't be bought in Britain.
Isn't that ridiculous, Father?
Only in Canada, eh? Pretty.
Now, you guys are still tea drinkers, whether you like it or not. You know, Orange Pekoe. Very few people would know what Orange Pekoe is outside of tea nerds like me and any Canadian.
You know, that's funny you say that, Ty, because one time I was in New York City and I asked for an Orange Pekoe tea and he looked at me like I was from Mars.
Well, you are from Mars, Tom.
Like, what the hell? That's a normal tea.
It's hard to find, even if you're looking for it. In Canada, that is the variety of choice. Yeah. And it's not bad. I mean, if you can get your hands on some good loose Orange Pekoe, that's great stuff. But I think the Canadians hog it all.
But I find your choices are in the States are weird. Like your standards one, like English breakfast, that seems to be one of the standards there.
English breakfast would be, you could find that pretty easily. And it's not bad. Nothing
Earl
wrong
Grey,
with a good English breakfast.
Earl what Grey, is it? I guess.
Ugh,
Earl Grey.
Yuck.
It can be good. It's pretty good if you get it loose. You can get some nice Earl Grey.
Lady Grey's better in my opinion, but I wouldn't touch either
there?
Of them.
What's the difference there?
One's a guy, one's a girl.
Thank you.
Jeez, Tom, do I have to explain this at this point? Come on.
I guess you're not going to answer my question. That's fine, Tom.
It's milder and less tutti frutti spicy dicey. Earl Grey's got
that's a great description.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not as bad as Constant Comment, but it's all right.
As what?
Constant Comment tea.
What the hell's that?
It's spicy tea.
Constant Comment?
Yeah, the idea is you serve it and the guests provide constant comment about how wonderful it is, I guess. I don't know. I don't make this stuff up.
I think you are making this stuff up. Wow, I've never heard of that.
All right, get yourself some constant comment before you criticize
it. You're going to have to send it to me. We don't have anything that ludicrous up in Canada.
Oh, it's just got to be Orange Pekoe, only available in Canada. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. How do we come back to tea every time? I guess we have that in common. There's another thing we have in common is tea.
Yeah.
Although I'm drinking Brazilian coffee here.
Sludge.
It is sludge. I made it too strong, and plus most of the liquid went squirting out when I tried to pour it. So it's stronger than normal.
Right. So, okay. So it's like Turkish coffee.
Oh, have you ever had that?
Oh, I think I would be awake for 3 days if I had that.
Okay. Let me go into my one Turkish coffee story. I was living in Mexico. I was at a coffee shop and they're serving Turkish coffee. I didn't drink coffee at all in those days. None. Hmm. It's about 7 at night. And I was like, oh man, I just got to try it. It sounds so wild. So I did. I'd never drunk coffee basically in my life. Let's just say at 7 a.m., I was still bouncing off the walls.
That's the worst.
Not being, I mean, it's a layer of sludge, a layer of coffee, and then a layer of sugar. I mean, it's sludge.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, that stuff's pretty crazy.
Yeah, but if you need to stay awake or, yeah, then that might be the thing for you. Or yeah. A friend of mine swears by 2 espressos and a Coke will keep you up and active as long as you need to all night long.
Hmm. You know, it's interesting you say that because my mother prescribes, because I actually get pretty tired behind the wheel a lot. I have like a major, I always get really tired around 2 o'clock PM and, Coke. If I'm tired on the road, I don't usually drink Coke, but, I'll just go get a Coke and I am immediately awake.
And if I'm in Latin America traveling, I mean, I've done plenty of that. Coke is my first line of defense for any intestinal stomach problems that you'll get.
Yes. I've heard that too.
And it's not a bad one. It's see it as medicinal rather than, you know, caffeine. Plus, outside of the U.S., if you go to Mexico or Brazil, it's double the caffeine, triple the sugar.
Right.
They want their kick.
Yeah. It's funny. It's funny. There's never been a medicinal Coca-Cola campaign. That would be amazing.
That would be a stroke of genius.
Traveling to Mexico?
You take don't a need. Coke. Yeah. Have a Coke and a smile.
Yeah.
But of course, you know, I mean, the active ingredient was cocaine up until 1907, and that was a drug that was prescribed against depression. And it worked beautifully as long as the drug lasted, and then you wanted more of it for some strange reason. So they made it illegal or almost illegal.
Right.
It can still be prescribed by a doctor in the U.S., by the way. It's only a Schedule II drug.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just watched the... there's that painkiller show on Netflix about the opioid, about Oxy and that whole campaign. It was really awful to watch how that unfolded. And I mean, it's still happening, obviously, in Canada and the U.S., but to see in the U.S. the campaign to get that drug and so many doctors prescribing it, and what a horrible thing.
I'll tell too. I mean, I deal with that up close and personal. There's a homeless shelter down the street, and discarded needles are all too common. Not that that's mm-hmm. OxyContin, but that's, you could trace it back to that.
Well, yeah, that's, it replaced it when they got cut off from the Oxy, that's, or when they needed more, as inevitably people do, then right. They end up with street drugs. So
on the other end of the spectrum, there is a monstrous mansion above my town, and it is the property of the lawyer who won the case against OxyContin.
No.
Yeah, really? He got something like 1/5 of the payoff.
Oh, wow. Wow.
And you can see the other end of it right up there. And still, it was peanuts compared to the billions in profits.
Yeah.
That I can't remember the name of the family that owned the corporation. But
oh, yeah, me neither.
But I mean, the name's out there.
Purdue is the company, but I can't think of that.
Exactly. But there's a family behind it.
Yeah, it's like Shatsons or something.
The Shatsons. Meet George Shatson.
All right, T, before we go down any further rabbit holes, what do you have for us today?
Maybe it's a good time to present the song.
Yes.
All right, let me go ahead. I'll go ahead and introduce our song here.
Okay.
First of all, obviously our show is called Hit Songs from Mars. This one is a hit song from Neptune.
Oh.
Okay. Huh. Hit song from Neptune.
Okay.
And you'll see why in a minute. It's pretty far out there.
Okay.
And you'll see where I'm going with it. I guess why tease when we can listen? So here we go.
Now And I know the tune, obviously, but I can't actually tell you what it is.
Taco Bell Canon in D.
Okay, right, of course.
All right, so Taco Bell Canon in D. This is our hit song from Neptune. Yeah, okay, so first question is, of course, why did you pick this song?
Yes.
All right. Uh-huh. Well, let me tell you. All right. Let's talk a little about the song. It is Paco Bell's Canon, or sometimes just called Canon in D. Uh-huh. And it's obviously named for the composer Johann Paco Bell, German composer. Uh-huh. And it's perhaps one of the most well-known classical pieces out there. Uh-huh. Okay. At least by sound, if not by name for most of us, Tom. Mm-hmm. Most of us know the name of that tune. And of course, it's a staple at weddings now. Okay.
Okay.
And of course, funerals. You hear it. I think it might have been played at my wedding. I can't remember.
Seems,
harp.
Seems very inoffensive, shall I say, to be kind.
You generally don't want an offensive song at your wedding. Okay. Generally speaking.
Or a funeral, probably more importantly.
It's become a funeral song too. It's sort of, I mean, it's got that whole celebration of life vibe to it, you know. and there are other reasons for that, like the possibility of continuing the song indefinitely. I'll talk about the song structure a little later. Mm-hmm. So written by Paco Bell, and the funny part is no one knows when it was written or why it was written. Okay, it's very obscure. Hmm.
Okay.
This is the kicker. This is why it's a hit song from Mars. It was utterly forgotten for 300 years.
Mm, okay.
This song has not been played continuously. I mean, you would think it's like, oh, everyone's known that song forever. It fell into complete obscurity at the end of Paco Bell's life, and it was basically lying in a vault for 300 years, okay? Lying in a state of suspended animation. So, can you name some other songs by Paco Bell, Tom?
Zero.
Don't ponder too much because neither can anybody else. He is the original one-hit wonder, okay? He's the original one-hit wonder.
Okay.
So, again, the song's dates range, I mean, they've tried to figure out when he wrote it, range from 1680 to 1706. That's the year he died. Okay. And that's a 26-year span. And for a guy that lived to be 52, that's basically saying we have no frickin' idea when he wrote it or why he wrote it, okay? The closest guess that seems to be somewhat convincing, it was written for Johann Christoph Bach's wedding. That's Johann Sebastian Bach's brother. Oh. They were all Johann Bach with a different middle name, okay? How weird is that? The dad was Johann Aristotle Bach or whatever it was. Everyone had a Johann. They're all Johanns, and so was Johann Paco Bell. Obviously, a very popular name in Germany in the late 18th century, whatever.
Yeah,
17th century. So, anyway, Paco Bell's remembered for basically people that know his music. It's like it's church music that he's mostly remembered for. This one just fell into complete and utter obscurity. And, you know, a professor of music at a university would probably have known it, a conductor at the London Philharmonic. But the song just disappeared, okay? Mm-hmm. And it's only started to sort of wake up in the 20th century. Some people sort of discovered it and played with it a little bit. But it'll only reemerge with a 1968 recording by a French composer or French conductor named Jean-François Palliade. Okay. That will awaken this sleeping beauty. All right. But here's the kicker on this one. Once that classical, let me go ahead and play that one. In fact, I did. That was the version I played. So you heard it.
Okay.
Okay. So that was the sort of the quintessential version. So once that song was released, it came back with a vengeance.
Okay.
All right. It came back with a vengeance and with a twist. Okay. And this is where, you know, music is, you know, you play with it, you make adjustments. Palliard apparently slowed it down. so significantly compared to what anyone else had ever done. He basically reduced the tempo to half the speed, making it the slow song that everybody knows.
Okay.
So he essentially redefined the song. And what will happen is that the song will just be suddenly be picked up everywhere. Okay. And by the 1980s, it's all over the place, to the point where, okay, it was the theme music for a big movie from 1980, Ordinary People. Do you remember that one?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. I don't know if I had ever seen it, but it was a big movie at the time.
It was big. Yeah.
And the first time I remember hearing it was GE had their Soft White Light Bulb release, and they used that song as the background music.
This is the soft, pure light of the GE Soft White Bulb. It creates a soft, warm glow that's beautiful to see by, and bright enough to work by with less glare and no harsh shadows. Because its high diffusion coating makes light that's soft, warm, glowing. So you can see the world.
It was this beautiful woman with her lovely daughter who was about 4 or 5. And it was like they were dressed up like, Baroque women or something. And they played that in the background. Hmm. The GE soft white light. Beautiful to see by, but bright enough to work by. Or whatever
it said. My goodness,
I think you
missed your calling, Ty. That was an excellent product announcement.
With less glare and no harsh shadows. Yeah, and I remember it too.
What are you doing on this goofy little podcast?
I don't know. Well, maybe we'll just start doing spots and we can do commercials and stuff. All right.
Yeah, I got to work on mine.
Yeah, you work on your technique and we'll do a commercial duel next time.
All right.
How about that?
Sounds good.
You can be the French fry kid for the those Canadian French fries. The kid just eats the fries. That's the commercial. You can do that.
Wait a minute.
You know, what's the big French fry company in Canada?
McCain's.
That's it. The McCain's. He just sits there and eats fries. That's the commercial. You can do that one. We just got to get you a plate of fries and some ketchup.
Super fries from McCain for the strong, silent type.
The strong, silent type? Fine.
All right. anyway, back to the song. It got to be so ubiquitous that the New Yorker did a parody cartoon of it. Of prisoners being tortured by listening to Paco Bell. Okay.
Nice.
Yeah. I mean, just that's how big it was. But let's back up a little bit. All the way to 1968, when Pollyard did his version and released it. Again, it had been recorded once before. It was recorded once before by, I can't even think of the guy's name, but it's Arthur Fielder, most remembered for his Christmas songs. Especially Sleigh Ride. It's still played quite a bit today. But the one that's remembered is Pollyard, okay? And he released that sometime in early 1968, but this is where it gets to be a phenomenon, is that suddenly pop bands all over the place picked up on it, okay, and started doing pop songs with this progression, the progression that Paco Bell used.
Oh, okay.
And we'll get to this a little later, but so many songs out there are this progression, and very few people realize it, okay?
What's the, are you going to tell me in the Nashville number system what the chord progression numbers are?
It's a 8-bar, 8-chord progression, starting on the 1, 5, 6, 3, 4, 1, 4, 5.
But anyway, so the first band, this is where it gets weird, okay? The song is released in the classical musical world in France by Pollyard. And within no time, like it's too fast, it's being picked up by pop bands. And there seems to be one of these cases where it's like it's too fast. It couldn't have picked up that quickly, but it had to have. But it's one like you ever hear that experiment of crossword puzzles where they had someone doing crossword puzzles in Los Angeles for the first time and the answers across time and across space get quicker once the first guy does the crossword puzzle, because somehow the answers are out there in the collective consciousness or whatever.
Ooh, I love that. Love that stuff.
Yeah. And apparently it's like once the first guy does it, the next people that do it, it's faster. It's like this happened with this song. So the band that gets the ball rolling is a group called Aphrodite's Child. Have you ever heard of them?
I have, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, they're a Greek band. And let me just talk a little bit about Aphrodite's Child. The band will yield bigger, the parts ended up being greater than the whole. Okay. It was basically a three-piece. The most famous person in that band will be Vangelis. Okay.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, okay. That makes sense.
Chariots of Fire, who I think he just died last year, but everyone knows Chariots of Fire. But let me go ahead and play their version of it before I talk about the band. How about that? Okay, here it is. It's called Rain and Tears, and this was a number one hit all over Europe. It wasn't big in Canada and the U.S., but a number one hit all over Europe. So here's Rain and Tears. Okay, there's Rain and Tears.
I like the singing.
Oh, I'll get to that. Vangelis is the keyboardist. And again, Vangelis went on to become Vangelis. Mm-hmm. The singer is a guy named Demis Roussos, okay? This guy, he's not as well known as Vangelis, but he is like beloved on the world music scene. Again, never got big in the U.S., but imagine Tiny Tim brought down about two notches, and that's him. Here's one of his songs called Forever and Ever.
Oh, dear. Love it.
Yeah, he brings tears to your eyes. The guy was great. And you have to see him to believe him. Look up a video or two. Look up Forever and Ever, the video. He wears this, I cannot think of the name of the article of clothing, but it's this, basically this robe, this cloak. It's not a cloak, but it's like a dress is what it's like, but it's not a dress. common in, India, that Middle East and that kind of thing. So, anyway, he was the other guy that made it big from the group Aphrodite's Child.
Okay.
And so, but anyway, back to the song, it went number one all over Europe, and quickly other ones followed. Here's one from a Spanish group, called, Top Pops or Pop Top. Sorry. It's called Pop Tops. And it's just canon in D. Here we go.
I have to say it, I'm not a big fan of this progression. I find it very boring. I've searched the sky. That's nice. To find a reason why,
oh Lord. It's a Spanish band, but they're doing sort of U.S. soul.
Yeah.
And then shortly thereafter, believe it or not, Parliament Funkadelic will do a cover of this Spanish song. Okay. So again, the progression's out there now. All right. Mm-hmm. And so, okay, keep that in mind. Let's move aside again. And as far as the original Polyard, suddenly a classical DJ in San Francisco starts playing it, 1971, mm-hmm. and gets flooded with requests. Play that one again. Play that one again.
Wow.
And it just, and then it caught on. Everybody who had a, who like compilation classical music records, it's like they included that now, and the song got bigger and bigger. And it'll end up on a, on an album called Go for Baroque, okay, in 1977. And just, again, it just goes out there. It's now part of the music universe, and everybody mm-hmm. knows the song, okay? Okay, let me, you said you didn't like the progression. What's your beef with this? Let me guess, the melody.
No, I don't know. I mean, you know, I mean, it's probably maybe backing up your point about how ubiquitous it is, but I just find it kind of boring. But probably because, as you are moving towards, I've heard it a million times in all of these different songs, so that's possibly why I find it boring.
All right, first of all, there are out there, you can go to YouTube and get plenty of these. There are, you know, there's all sorts of people that like, okay, classical music and pop, and we can come back to that in a little bit, but specifically for this song, the progression, Canon and D, it's a varied and wide range of artists, starting with, let me name some songs, just to select a few, okay. There were many more. Bob Marley, No Woman, No Cry. Alphaville, Forever Young. Twisted Sister, We're Not Going to Take It.
I like how you enunciated that so carefully.
Well, yeah, you have to when it's Twisted Sister. You don't mess around with Dee Snider.
That's true.
You Two, With or Without You.
Oh, yes.
The Beatles, Let It Be.
Yep.
When I find myself in times of trouble, Mother Mary comes to me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be.
And in more modern times, Maroon 5, Memories.
Here's to the ones that we got. Cheers to the wish you were here, but you're not, cause the drinks bring back all the memories of everything we've been through.
And that's just to name just a few. There's actually a pretty funny YouTube clip out there. It's called Paco Bell's Rant. Okay. And I can't think of the name of the comedian. He's a musician comedian. Those guys can be really good. You know, a musician who found a better niche in comedy. And basically he talks about how he despises Paco Bell because he can't escape.
On the drive home, I turned on some classic rock, some Aerosmith. There was a time when I was so brokenhearted. La, da, 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 da. So I got home, I thought I'd clear my mind with some folk music. No. Listen, children, to my story. It was written long ago. They do Paco Bell just like everybody does Paco Bell, just to torment me. I don't even go to Taco Bell anymore because it sounds too close.
In the same thing, there's another clip out there you could find, something called Axis of Awesome, where they do the same thing. They just go through this Paco Bell progression.
Okay.
And they just, you know, they go after it and go over it and over it. But let's talk about what makes this structure so appealing, except for to Tom. this comedian who does the Paco Bell rant, he touches on this. Mm-hmm. Okay, the whole song is based on 8 bass notes. Okay, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Dun dun. You know how this works.
Mm-hmm.
Those literally, the song changes. It changes tempo. It speeds up. It slows down. But that never changes. Mm-hmm. So if you're playing the cello on that song, you will play eight notes over and over and mm-hmm. over again. Okay, mm-hmm. forever long you take the song out. So what makes this so versatile is there's a lot you can do on top of that. And there's a lot of instruments, you know, instrumentations. Like the original Paco Bell canon was, I think it was done with three violins, and they have all these exquisite, you know, harmonies and things like that. In the eight note, four chord progression, again, you could do it on a harpsichord for a certain mood, on an acoustic guitar for a certain mood. If you're doing a wedding procession, it can be 20 seconds, it can be 20 minutes, because you just keep repeating those eight notes. Mm-hmm. So there's so much you can do with it. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. And of course, if you perform at weddings, you're going to have played this, you know, in no time flat a whole bunch of times.
Yeah.
Because it's just going to be a standard, and you can do whatever you want with it.
Well, this is very interesting to me, Ty, because this makes me think about songs that I like to improvise pedal steel on, where you're right. There's those basic chords, and then you can just take it all over the place and just run with it and improvise. That's interesting.
Well, I remember the one time I played with you, remember we played one of your parents' dinner parties?
Yeah.
And I remember we were practicing and you said, don't be throwing in all those incidentals and things like that. Just give me the basic chord progression. I don't care what order you do it in, but just use those basic chords and that'll give me all the room I need to play.
That's it. Yeah. In terms of improvisation, like obviously that modulation is great and adds interest. But in terms of if I'm just going to sit in, that's the thing. Like when I play shows and people hear the pedal steel, it's because it's sort of still kind of rare. So often they'll be like, oh, can you come play on a couple songs or whatever, like stuff I've never heard, right? And I say, no problem. Just like probably pick a tune that doesn't change key within. Because if it stays within that key, I can just go all night, no problem. So yeah, this is interesting.
So you may want to pick up as part of your canon, Paco Bell canon, and do a steel guitar version. No, there's probably one out there. There has to be.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure there is, yeah.
Yeah, so again, it's just got incredible versatility. And again, with all the variety of music, I mean, Bob Marley coming up with a version and Twisted mm-hmm. Sister thrown into the same pot is a pretty unusual situation.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about the Twisted Sister song, trying to recalibrate my brain I can hear it.
Yeah, it's again, I think in the classical music world, you don't necessarily have to have something like Rain and Tears by Aphrodite's Child, where it's really an almost perfect representation of the original.
Yeah.
What they like to say is they quote the original song by lifting a little piece here.
Yeah.
Like Let It Be is, you can hear it in there, but it's not just a reproduction of Paco Bell's canon.
No, for sure.
But the progression is there. If you like see your brain gears churning, just, oh yeah, there it is. There it is. There it is.
Right.
But this is just one little piece of a whole bunch of classical songs that have been repurposed for pop. And you might not, like, I think maybe, you know, someone like the Aphrodite's Child, they might have thought they're going to get away with murder. It's like, oh, listen to this. No one knows this song. Mm. And it's like, oh, these guys are just incredible. Look what they came up with.
We kind of covered this idea in our, which episode? It was Falco episode where we were talking about Laura Branigan and how she used to take old Italian songs and make it seem like they were her melodies or whatever.
pretty sneaky, and you can do it with ease in 1982 or whatever it was, yeah, because right, they're not just all out there. If you're Italian, you're like, oh man, that's just such and such.
Yeah.
But if you're the composer, you're not going to care one bit. You're going to mm-hmm. break it in. Let's see how many songs you can name off the top of your head that are classically based or based on some classical piece.
Oh God.
Let me show you what I came up with, because I wouldn't have been able to answer off the top of my head probably either. Among other more famous ones, the Beatles' Because. You know that one?
Yeah,
Because the wind is high, it blows my mind. It's on Abbey Road.
Okay, yeah.
That one's a funny one. It's Beethoven's Moonlight Sonata played backwards.
What?
Yep, they just what? Here's how the story goes.
Oh my God! Wait a minute, is this a McCartney song or a,
no? It's a Lennon song. Well, it's actually a Ludwig van Beethoven song. But
well, okay.
No, it's a Lennon song.
Okay.
He basically Yoko and John were in the studio, and she was playing the Moonlight Sonata, and he's like, "Oh, I like that." He's like, "Can you play it backwards?" And she did. And that's the basis of Because.
Okay, hold on a second.
Yeah, okay.
That's insane that she could do that.
Yeah, she must be a hell of a pianist. That's all I can
She's
say.
She's an incredible artist. I mean, that's...
I'm not going to join you with that one on vocals, but I'll give it to you if she can play Moonlight Sonata backwards.
Wow. But that's a certain kind of genius right there.
Let's just say she put the time in on the piano at the very least. If you can play a song backwards, I play Moonlight Sonata on my guitar.
Mm-hmm.
It would take me a year to learn to play it backwards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
There's that one. That's kind of a fun one. Of course, another Beatles song. Beatles, again, given all this credit for being these geniuses, they're just lifting classical pieces. Blackbird is Bach's Bourée in E minor. Okay. Not note for note, but it's based on that.
Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly all your life. You were only waiting for this moment to arrive.
Another Beethoven piece, obviously Walter Murphy's A Fifth of Beethoven, the disco version. You remember that one?
Oh, yeah.
One really cool one. I didn't know this until I was researching for this song. Black Sabbath's eponymous song, Black Sabbath, was based on Planets.
Oh, I love the Planets. Holst, isn't it?
A lot of this stuff that is modern is classical, and specifically Paco Belcanin had a great influence on mega hits 300 years later.
Yeah.
Man, I'm telling you, the late 1600s are coming back in a very big way.
So it's not the two decade thing. It's more like 300 years.
Paco Bell launched a missile into space and it stayed in orbit for 300 years and it landed in France, 1968, and Pollyard picked it up. And the rest, as they say, is music history.
Yeah. Well, it's funny actually, because not so much on the classical pop realm, but there's quite an amazing genre of music that you would kind of call like alternative classical. And I love that genre.
For example,
Godspeed You Black Emperor. Do you know that band? There are huge sort of cults, really successful cult band all over the world. You should check them out for sure.
Looking forward to it.
Very dark, very ambient and experimental. Really amazing. They're actually, one of the guys lives about 10 kilometers from where I am right now, which is crazy. They're a big one. A band, Rachel's, that I love a lot, is a little less heavy, but very interesting incorporation of classical music, alternative music, full drum kit. Amazing band. To me, when you get a little experimental with classical music and not so much experimental, but like blending it with more alternative music, I love that. And actually I can't get enough of that music. There's a few, I'm sure there's more than I know, bands doing that kind of thing, but I absolutely love it.
My favorite song, piece, composition, whatever you want to call it, is modern, or even you could call it postmodern classical music. Philip Glass's The Grid. Oh,
yeah.
The Grid must be 14 minutes long. And on my old computer, it registered the number of times you played it. It was always number one. And when I got rid of that computer, it was over 500 times. You had to listen to the song from start to end for it to register.
Okay. And
I still can't get enough of it. Yeah. It was like, that was written for me.
I love Philip Glass. Yeah.
Yeah. He's incredible. He's considered classical, but it's the word is weird at that point.
Yeah. But you know, it's sort of going a slightly different direction, but sort of pop, but Sufjan Stevens, Sufjan Stevens.
Oh, absolutely.
I've been recently obsessed with his Come On, Feel the Illinois record. I got this really nice turntable, I'll grab a glass of wine and I'll just sit in front of the speakers and, it just like, it's awe inspiring. There's a lot of strings. The arrangements are incredible. It's beautifully recorded. His voice sits in this place that, it's just remarkable.
He's an interesting guy. He's one of the softest musicians out there.
Yeah.
But it's everything is floating. Everything is floating.
Yeah.
If you're in the mood, I mean, you got to be in the mood for him, honestly, or I do.
But if
you're in the mood, he is the man.
It's unbelievable. It really is. I need to dig deeper because, I think it's funny because I feel like I bought this record a long time ago. And it's really the first time I've just sat and listened in front of the and something different happened where I just didn't realize the level of detail in that album, and I'm just blown away by it.
You got to be ready for things. Sometimes you got to be in the mood.
Yeah.
Like in a different genre, for example, one of my favorite filmmakers is a guy named Werner Herzog, German filmmaker.
Yeah. Of course, yeah.
His first movie is a movie called Even Dwarfs Started Small. And it's about dwarfs, an insane asylum of dwarves that take over the insane asylum. Okay. It's one of the most disturbing movies you'll ever see. I think it might be the only movie that I ever, it's like, I can't deal with this. This is too much. I just turned it off.
Wow.
The next day I had like the worst day of my life. Everything was going wrong. Everything was out of sync. And I just popped it in again and it all made perfect sense at that
point. Wow.
Yeah. I had to be in the mindset.
Yeah. That's amazing.
To see what he was up to there.
Yeah. That's incredible. Yeah, really, it just shows how, yeah, your mindset is so important to that. It's funny because I remember watching some weird movies like Eraserhead. Did you ever watch that?
Oh, yeah. That's when you got to see before you die.
I felt like I felt stoned when I left the movie theater. It just like altered my reality. It was really odd.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's going, if you're not in the mood to watch it, you will be put in the mood if you sit there for the entire length of it. I mean, that singing cow fetus, it has to be, you know, one of the most bizarre things of all time.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been a long time for me.
Yeah. I don't know if I'd enjoy it now, but again, it's one of the ones you see once in your lifetime and it's great.
Yeah.
If you're watching it every night, probably seek help.
Yeah. This is very interesting, Ty.
Yeah, it's sort of like, you know, the world has to be ready for something. And in the case of Paco Bell Canon, the world was really ready for it 300 years after it was composed.
Yeah. And I like to come back to this collective unconscious thing that we were talking about earlier. That's a pretty amazing, that's an amazing idea. And of course, it's it lends credence to these bands who say they're not ripping off songs.
Yeah, they're right. Forgiven.
They're like, oh, it was just in the air. All suddenly, we were all doing the, you know, the riff from Enter Sandman.
Yeah. The thing is, there may be something to that. That's the amazing thing. And you're just borrowing from something you're a part of, this grand collective human unconsciousness or whatever.
Well, and you know, this is the thing, right? Like so many of the great songwriters say that they don't write the songs; they pluck them out of the ether. This is such a common thing. Tom Petty says that. I think Bob Dylan says that. Neil Young says that. They're just there and they want to be the first ones to grab them. And I think the idea is to make yourself open to grabbing these songs out of the air. Wow, this is getting really hippie, like my mauve shirt.
That's right. And of course, Barry Manilow channeling Satan with, I write the songs that make the whole world sing. Uh-huh. No, religious groups called him out by saying he was channeling Satan. And they're right. It's Barry Manilow.
They're right. Yeah. He's definitely channeling evil.
I write the songs.
Thanks for tuning in to TNT's Hit Songs from Mars. We hope you enjoyed yourself and learned a few things along the way.
For a complete list of songs you heard in this episode, visit us at hsfm.buzzsprout.com. We hope you'll support the artists we featured by purchasing their music.
If you liked this episode, please subscribe to the podcast and you'll receive new episodes as soon as they become available. While you're at it, if you could give us a rating or review wherever you get your podcasts, that would really help us out. We would like to thank The Reverb Syndicate for providing the theme song for our podcast. They have an extensive catalog of tunes just as rockin' as the one you hear here.
Here, here.
You can find them at thereverbsyndicate.ca and on Facebook, SoundCloud, and Bandcamp, which typically pays artists the most. We would also like to thank Eric Minot for designing our podcast icon. You can find his design and illustration work on Instagram at Minot Graphics. That's MinoGraphx. You can connect with us on Instagram at TNTS, Hit Songs from Mars.
Feel free to disagree, praise, correct, and chastise us.
We would also love to hear your idea of a hit song from Mars and why you think it fits the mold. Even better, if you felt like recording a voice memo and sending it our way, you can email us at hitsongsfrommars@gmail.com. We may even feature it on the show. Until next time, Earthlings.